Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is not a normal episode of the show. This is one of our best of episodes for the 2018 podcast season. And today I'm joined by the person who actually picked this episode. And we're going to talk about why it is their favorite and why it deserves to be a best of episode. And then after we kind of do that brief intro, you'll be able to transition into hearing the episode itself in its full entirety. So whether you heard it before or it's your first time listening to it, I think you'll appreciate hearing the whole episode with all this kind of extra information in front and kind of shed new light on the episode so you can experience it again or for the first time in a very new way. So I am joined today by the one and only Mr. Mike Payne. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Jonathan. How's yourself?
I'm doing okay. I'm really excited that you are here and that you're participating. And I'm extra excited that you picked this special episode.
I am too. We had a great time up there. Matter of fact, that's one of the few chances I got to play with you.
Yeah. So what is your pick for this episode?
Oh, the Huzzah episode 209.
Yeah, we got to go, and it was a lot of fun because, like, Adrian and I actually drove up to the convention together. We carpooled all the way up, and so, like, we were there. We shared a room, and then we played in games. We kind of did our own thing, and it was a lot of fun to actually get to see you, Mike, and to play games with you, and then to talk about stuff on the podcast episode.
Yeah, well, it's good to see you guys because this is the only time I really get to see you two, at least sometimes at TotalCon.
Yeah, unfortunately in 2019, I'm not going to be there.
I know.
Adrian might be.
I hope so. I'd like to see you both, but I know you got things going on. So
yeah, the baby's coming.
Yeah, pretty soon.
Or maybe here by the time people listen to this. It's hard to tell with things. But right. I know Adrian, I think, is hoping to go to TotalCon with his daughter. And
good.
Yeah, I mean, it's her kind of convention. I'm not sure if Huzzah is her kind of thing, but there was a lot of fun stuff that happened up at Huzzah and a lot of things that we talked about in the episode about it.
Chris and Tony talk about their experience at the con because I didn't get to see them anywhere near as much as I would like to. And I think I enjoyed that almost as much as listening to you and Adrian tell us about your adventures up there.
Yeah, it was a real treat for Chris Boynton and Tony Rieger to come on the show because I've been a fan of what they've done for many, many years. And then it just kind of happened, you know, just by accident, I think. And I can't even remember exactly who set it up, but they just kind of like, Chris came over and he's like, can we have someone else come over later on? And next thing you know, we're chatting for a while. And then Tony comes ambling over and he pulls up a seat and we start chatting and just learning about their process when they work on those tables and create those games. And I mean, they spent a lot of time talking about bolt action in particular, but you could use that for almost any system in any time period.
Oh yeah. I'm never going to use bolt action on my table unless somebody else wants to run it, which is fine with me. I love to play it. You know, it's a good game. I'll play it anytime, but just I'm not running it. You know, that's not my cup of tea, but to play it, it's fun.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. And I think bolt action may have won a War Games Illustrated Award for 2018 as a best game, I think.
Oh, really?
I think it won something like that because Warlord like swept a lot of categories for stuff, of course. But I think they were up there for bolt action. And Tony and Chris, actually, they do a lot. And they don't do it just by themselves either. Dave Schuster is involved. And they've been in War Games Illustrated. And they have connections with Warlord, actually, because of their bolt action stuff. They just make these beautiful tables.
Right, yeah, they got some great stuff they put up. I think I got some pretty nice pictures of that stuff. Matter of fact, if I remember or you remind me, I'll attach my picture album to when you post this.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but when I look at their tables, it kind of makes me think of museum quality stuff.
Oh yeah.
People who've never looked at it.
There's a certain line that has to be drawn because it's not a museum we're playing on. So you have to figure out where that is.
I think they do a really good job of that too, because I mean, you're right. Oh, yeah. If you just want a diorama, that's one thing, but you actually have to fit your stuff in it and you have to move things around and like maybe get it. Like they do a lot with buildings, right? Cause they were doing Stalingrad. So like you got to actually get into the building to do stuff. You can't just like, hey, look, there's a building.
I like that Tony mentioned the stove hanging from the wall. That was pretty neat. I think I got a picture of that.
That's a great touch.
It was, especially because it was really like that. You know, he didn't just make that up. He got that from a photo.
Yeah, and I think they did a great job emulating it. And I know they used kits, actually, from Things from the Basement for a lot of this stuff. But some of the stuff Things from the Basement made special because they requested it.
Right. Yeah, Jörg really backed them up on that one. That whole project is amazing.
People can buy it, too, actually. They can buy their own kits and build it themselves, all the Stalingrad pieces.
Yeah, it's fun watching them set it up and break it down, even. You know, it's just what a circus. Unbelievable.
And I can't remember if Tony talked about it in the episode, Mike, and you might have to jog my memory, but at one point in he and I talking, because after doing the recording, he and I have kind of struck up this ongoing conversation about just gaming stuff, but he had said that all the pieces fit at his place, either in the basement or in his home, and he doesn't have a whole lot of storage. Like, stuff like compacts up or something, and like it wedges in places, and somehow or other, like all these tables just fit in there.
Yeah, they're masters like that. I probably need a few tips on how to store my stuff.
Yeah, you have a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah, but I did get to talk to Dave Schuster at the con, and it was fun talking to him too. He has a big part in all of that too. Those guys are dynamos, so unbelievable.
They are.
And Chris too. Chris does some amazing stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent up there. You get to see it when you go to Huzzah.
Yeah, I mean, those three guys and a whole bunch more. I mean, I love going to that con. If anybody who hasn't been there should at least try it once, because I bet you'll have to go again once you go one time. Look at you. You go on your anniversary.
Yeah, it tends to be the weekend of my wedding anniversary.
Yeah, you're lucky to have a wife like that.
She is very special. There's no doubt about that. Huzzah is super easy to get to because they get the jetway just up the road. You can drive, you can take a boat. Like, you can get there so many different ways. It's really easy. And the hotel is pretty cool too. So like, there's good rooms there, accessible to a lot of good food, great games. They got a great space for gaming.
Yeah, it's one of the best weekends of the year for me. It's right up there with this Christmas that's coming.
So what about the episode in particular kind of stands out and makes it like your favorite compared to other episodes? Because like, there's been a lot of other.
When you asked me to pick one, I really didn't know how the hell I was going to pick one, because I love them all. You know, they all have their unique aspects to them. And, you know, just the fact that I would get to listen to Tony and Chris, because I don't get to talk to those guys that much at the con. I'm busy, too. As a matter of fact, there's no way that you would have got me to come onto the show. I'm booked up, you know.
Yeah, you ran.
Yeah, I got something going on every session, and so that was a real treat to have you and Adrian show up Saturday night for the test of honor at Hang High. That was pretty cool.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Pat Tuttle and Chris Rett ran a nice little event there. You guys mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're great people, and I had a lot of fun playing with Jörg and his wife.
Yeah. Jörg and Petra, they were great. Good teammates, even though we didn't pull it off. You guys beat them.
It was close, though. For me, it was kind of funny playing with them, because at one point during the game, you could kind of see like a twinkle go into Jörg's eye when he realized, wait a sec, I should start making stuff to use with Test of Honor. And not even like 3 months later, what does he start releasing? But like feudal Japanese terrain pieces.
Yeah, he's got some nice stuff. I got my eye on a couple of those. I'll stick something on the Hang High table.
Yeah, he has some deals going on too, and I don't know when they expire, but there's like some pretty good like combination sets you can get at a pretty good discount.
Yeah, I'm going to probably kit bash it somehow.
You're very talented with that.
Well, it just makes it more fun. I want to do something to make it a little more unique, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not right out of the box.
No, you're good with that kind of stuff. Not all of us are, but you have a way.
I could bet you I could get you on the page. You know, I mean, this is your thing, and you do it better than anybody I know anyway. But
I used to say, oh, I don't know about that, but then I used to say that about painting too, and lo and behold, I paint. So maybe you never know.
Yeah, the workmanship is pretty good too, you know. I think you're doing all right, man.
I'm pretty lucky, because with the new studio I have, I actually have a designated space that isn't completely cleared off yet, but I can use it as like a painting space. So I have like this painting desk that I can use. I just got to put like a, I have an Ott light I can put down over there, and so I can just have stuff going all the time. But then, like, I have all these other spaces for recording podcasts or recording video or playing games and all that kind of stuff. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to bring some of your painted figures to hang high, and we'll have a little background to take some pictures and put them in the picture album.
Do you know what I have that would be interesting? Although I don't think it's the right time period. I got some neat like field emplacements that would be kind of cool. There's like foxholes, and there's like a weapons emplacement that you could, I don't know, some sort of anti-tank gun. Or some
I think you posted those. Yeah, we can get them. We'll find a place to stick them.
Yeah, they're from Ironclad Miniatures, a UK publisher. They're really nice pieces. A lot of fun. I saw those.
They came out nice. Yeah. It's
good stuff. People really go all out at Huzzah, and it can be a little intimidating, but people shouldn't let that hold them back, because everyone's really welcoming and understanding and just excited to have people coming and play games and to run stuff and try something new.
It's a great crowd. I haven't met anybody up there that didn't have the right attitude. It's just a lot of fun.
It's good people. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, I love that place.
Well, I don't know about you, but I hope that listeners have enjoyed hearing some of this kind of extra content about the Huzzah episode, so that when they transition into listening to it in a moment, that they'll have a new kind of spotlight for it, a new way to appreciate it and enjoy it.
Well, they don't need to listen to us. Just jump ahead and listen to the episode.
It's a good episode. It's a long one, but it's a good one. And I agree with you. Just being able to listen to Tony and Chris talk about stuff, like, that's the kind of thing that I think a lot of people are really interested in, terrain making and building those kind of tables and that kind of stuff. And I think it's intimidating for a lot of people, but really you can do it. And if you're not inspired by these guys, then I don't know what's going to inspire you. So you just,
they inspire me, man.
Yeah, they are amazing people.
They're just incredible. I mean, I'm going to post my album when you.
Yeah, that'll be really good.
Yeah. Of course, I probably took too many of my own stuff too, but oh well.
No such thing.
Not for me, I guess.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate that you took the time to come and do this recording and to pick this episode. I think it's a great episode, and it's a perfect episode for you, actually.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me. I had fun. It was good.
Well, I hope everyone will be sure to see you at the upcoming conventions that you're going to be at and playing your games. What's your next convention you're going to be doing?
What's the next thing I'm doing? I got a makerspace thing coming up in Amherst, and I'm a game day, and I'm at TotalCon. I'm running a game.
Oh, and when's the makerspace thing?
I think it's January 5th.
Wow! So people should start getting ready to go to that, and then go to TotalCon.
Yeah, I think that my dates are messed up or something. But whatever.
You, we can put stuff on social media so people can see that and be sure to check it out. But if nothing else, they'll be at they should go to TotalCon. Pre-registration's open now, and then they can play in your game.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope we get a good crowd. I got a nice crowd last year.
I know this embarrasses you, but I'm going to do it anyway.
And don't do it.
I don't like to embarrass people.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
But Mike, you are
lucky. I can't reach through that microphone that I'm looking at right now.
You are an amazing game master. You really create an experience.
You know, you kind of cut that crap out. It's
true. You create an experience unlike almost anyone else. And if people haven't played in your game, they need to play in your game.
You can't. You know, you're not doing me any favors.
Oh, God, it's so good.
You know? It's, cut it out.
It really is.
It's a lot better if you don't have high expectations. No, you come in with high expectations, you're going to be done, I promise.
Do you know what? The one caveat I will say is, if people are not the kind of people who can play nicely with kids, they just got to find something else. Like, you have to, because...
Yeah, we don't want to, if you can't play with kids, we really would rather you played something else.
I mean, like, there's a lot of kids, they love to have fun, and that's the future of the hobby. So, like, you have to be willing to just go and be like, okay, we're going to be a good sport and play with a bunch of kids and just have a good time.
Hey, when we play without kids, we have a good time, but it still feels like something's missing.
Yeah.
Because there is. It is. The kids just, they give it that intangible that I can't get any other way.
No, I agree with you. They make it.
They crack me up. That's why I keep doing it, man.
Yeah. Well, you are very good at what you do.
Yeah. Okay. Take it easy.
And I can't wait for the next time that I can see a game that you do and maybe be able to play in it as well.
Oh, yeah. I love having you at the table, Jonathan, anytime.
It is so much fun.
Bring some of your figs.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoy this little bit of extra stuff that Mike and I shared with all of you. And be sure to stay tuned for the rest of the episode and enjoy that. And then we'll be back at some point in 2019 with more new content for all of you to listen to. But until then, we'll have other best of episodes coming at you with extra blurbs and intros by myself and other people as well. Just kind of highlighting episodes from the 2018 season that maybe you missed or maybe you should listen to again. Mike, thank you very much again for being on here and doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, I had a great time. And a little shout out to Rogues in the House. That's pretty good, too.
That is such a good show. And yeah. Alex hates promoting it. I keep on telling him, just go on our feeds and tell people about it and promote it. And he doesn't want to promote it, but I think it's such a good podcast that he does.
Yeah, it's fun. That was fun. I enjoyed that too.
It's good stuff. People should check it out. Rogues in the House. They're on Anchor. They're on Spotify. They're in Apple Podcasts. And they're on Facebook. They're all over the place.
They're there.
It's good stuff. Well, everyone enjoy the episode.
See you, Jonathan.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Hey, and we're live. Okay. Takes a minute. It's one of the first times of us doing here a Facebook Live video. So things are a little different. If you're watching live, apologies. And if you're listening, you're not going to listen to this because Joshua, you're going to edit out this beginning stuff in case you didn't realize it. Because I know you listen. So this is going to get edited out. But we're going to just go ahead and start doing the podcast episode. We're recording live from Huzzah and, of course, with my buddy Adrian here. And we're going to have a guest walk from that way coming to join us momentarily, and we'll update things as that happens. But let's just slide on in to the podcast recording. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host.
Sorry.
Because we've never done this before.
I know, but you know how I... Totally my fault.
You know, since we're paid actors, because we've been in a documentary, we should know what it's like when someone else messes up your scene.
We should.
Gotta just calm down. Focus. Live. You don't get this other than in a live recording, Adrian.
Oh, my God.
Did you forget the cheese factor?
I did not, but and sometimes it has no effect on me at all, and then other times it just, whoa. Okay. Anyway, go ahead with it. Don't let me interrupt.
Let's try this again. But if you are watching live and you're enjoying all the shenanigans, feel free to comment. From time to time, I'll be able to look over and see what your comments are, maybe respond on air. And we'll actually do a podcast recording, if you're...
No, I think I'm ready. I think we can get started.
Think of, like, terrible things, and that'll just calm you down. No, or not. Okay, here we go. Try again. Joshua, you know what to do, buddy. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 209. Huzzah! 2018, where we combine both historical and New England gaming. Joining me today is my buddy and co-host, Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks.
Are you sure? Because you're looking a little tired, my friend.
I am a little tired. It's been a long weekend.
It has been a long weekend, but a good weekend, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Huzzah, for those of you who do not know, is probably my favorite historical wargaming convention in Northern New England.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, definitely.
And some people might argue it might be the only one.
I don't think it is. No, I don't think
I
would argue that.
Good.
It's definitely the biggest, I think.
I think so, too. They do a great job. Wide array of games, focusing primarily, of course, on historical and tabletop miniatures.
Yep.
But they do board games. They've had sci-fi. They do pulp. They kind of branch out. Some fantasy, I think, they had this year, right?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't notice any fantasy. There was more pulp this year.
There was a lot more pulp. Yeah. More sci-fi, too, actually.
Yeah.
You might call this sci-fi as opposed to fantasy, and you might be right because of the absence of magic. But Gabriel Landowski running his almost kind of like All Quiet on the Martian Front, but not that, his kind of conglomeration.
Yeah, I'd call that more dystopian, but yeah.
Just kind of how he blends it, but what-if historical sort of, ahistorical sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they have a variety of games. Every year they do it about this time of year, right? May 20, whatever.
Yeah, it's always May.
Sometime around that second, third weekend usually?
Yeah, wherever they can schedule it, that it doesn't conflict with Mother's Day, because the very first year it was held on Mother's Day weekend, and
that's a problem.
Proven to be an unpopular option.
The first year I came, it was actually on my wedding anniversary weekend, and I said to my wife, oh, this is convention, because you were telling me about it. I was like, can we go? She's like, sure. And I remember telling people on the boards, and they're like, wait, coming on your wedding anniversary weekend? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh. And so that was just kind of really fun. It's held here in Portland, Maine, which is a beautiful place to be, a beautiful city. We're actually in South Portland, now, but it used to be in Portland.
Yeah.
So you're near everything. We're near the main mall. You get all that kind of stuff. But the hotel itself, it's great. They get great amenities, great convention space.
Yeah.
So you can have a larger kind of gathering without being too big or too imposing.
Yeah, it's definitely not. You don't feel crowded at all, so it's a good thing.
Why don't we dive on into the games that we played? Because we signed up for a few games, and of course I have to look at my name tag to be like, what did I sign up for? So you and I, right, we didn't sign up for the same things necessarily.
No, we tried, but
failed.
Yeah.
So the first game we signed up for was called Operation Jupiter, Hill 112. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, there's not much to say about it. It was a set of rules that I wanted to give a try. It was, I think he was running with Rapid Fire, which I'd wanted to give a shot. But unfortunately, there's a little bit of an issue with us getting into that game, largely our own fault. So it was supposed to be on a particular table. And so we went into the main gaming room and found that table. And I'm standing around and I'm looking at the game. And actually, the game master was Rich Clayton. And I was like, Rich isn't running this game. And I'm looking at the setup, and it's like colonial Germans, and there's palm trees. And I'm like, this isn't Hill 112. But you have to understand that I had had a drink or two by this time, so everything was a little bit slow coming together in my mind. What had happened was that the game we were supposed to be playing in had been moved to a different table. We didn't realize it. I should have realized it as soon as I walked up to the table, because
palm trees.
Yeah, this isn't France, and Rich isn't running the game. So.
Well, do you know what, though? Part of the problem, I think, was, at least for me anyway, like, we got there, and I'm looking, I didn't know much of anything about what we were actually supposed to be playing, because the wonderful thing about signing up for pre-registration is that eventually they take down all the things that you signed up for, so you get an event list, but you don't get to see what you signed up for.
Yeah.
So it was all like brand new to me. And I was like, what did I sign up for? I don't know. Oh, look, I signed up for this and this and this. I don't know what they are, because I don't remember the descriptions or anything. And I could have looked, but I didn't. So between that and where this table was, it was in the space where they do a raffle several times throughout the con.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of things. You can buy raffle tickets. Proceeds go to the Wargaming Club, which is a nonprofit. So it helps them out with all that and with the run of the con. But that was right next to it, and they were doing a poll. So they're pulling all the things to see who the winners are.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing, too. And typically the games don't start until after the raffle is done. So we were hanging out for that. And by the time the raffle polls were done and everything, I had finally connected everything in my head. And I was like, John, this isn't our game. So we went out to the main desk and found out that, in fact, our game had been moved to a different table. But unfortunately, by the time we got over to that table, it had been, God, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes after the time the game was supposed to start. So the GM had given our slots away to a couple of alternates, or maybe a couple of people just walked up and wanted to play. I'm not sure. So, and I think the con might actually have a 15. I mean, I wouldn't have.
I think they might, too.
I think they have a 15-minute rule where if, you know, you're not there, your spot gets given away. But I wouldn't have asked anyway, even if they didn't have that rule. It was like, yeah, oh, well.
No, because, I mean, by that point, it's on us. And like,
totally.
We don't want to be a jerk about it.
Yeah, it's like, it was pretty much totally my fault.
But on the plus side, I mean, we got to spend some of that time.
I've been saying that a lot this weekend. That's totally my fault.
Which is unusual for you. But with all that going on, after we realized and we're like, we got to go look at the vendors a little bit more, do some shopping. And then we went back up to the room and we did an unboxing video on Facebook Live, which was nice. So some listeners were able to watch that and respond with that. So that was kind of neat. So you can see that up on Facebook Live, and we'll put that on YouTube too, because turns out Facebook now lets you download your videos, which they didn't let you do before. It's kind of neat.
Okay.
So we can just kind of pull that and go. So that was the Friday night, right? That was after the drive and the traffic and all that. But we don't need to bore people with all that, right?
No.
Do we want to talk about the food? About the amazing meal we had when you had your tea cake?
If you want to talk about it, we can. I don't think people care about the food, but we went to a Mexican restaurant. I actually can't remember the name of the restaurant. It's right across the street from the hotel.
I can't either.
Oh, on the border. That's what it's called, on the border. Actually, a really good restaurant. I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, but the food was awesome.
Yeah.
But so I ordered a beer, which
kind T-Kate.
Of Tecate, but I don't know how we got to Tecate, but John's been having a really amusing time with it.
I have been.
I think he... See, I have a problem with him having a good time with it, because I get the feeling that he's making fun of our waitress and the way she pronounced it or didn't understand what
I would never, because it's not polite to make fun of another person in that way. Let's say it on the joke.
Yeah, I think we all know that that's not true. So, yeah, I think he's making fun of our waitress, so that actually makes me a little upset. She was very nice, though she didn't know what they had on the beer list, but that's okay.
She was probably new. Get a cut or a break.
I think she was probably new. But, so anyway, I don't know. You can explain that. I don't know how we got to Tecate, but for some reason it's been a thing all weekend. And if I'm being honest, it's getting a little old.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the restaurant, and I was surprised because I wouldn't think that you'd get something like this that would be that delicious at a Mexican restaurant in, like, Northeast America. But the fish was so good.
Yeah.
And, like, you think, okay, seafood in the Northeast, like, you should get really good seafood. But, like, at a Mexican place, like, are they going to really – but it was like this – I don't remember what type of white fish it was, but it was this white fish that
all the same.
It was grilled and they had, like, mango on it. It was absolutely delicious. Yeah. And so that was a nice highlight to kind of go. And I think it made the sting of not getting into Hill 112 a little easier to deal with.
That was a really good restaurant. Usually when we come up here, I either just eat at the hotel because that's easiest, or go over to, Cracker Barrel, because it's walking distance from the hotel. But I branched out a little bit this year, and it was worth doing.
And then you and I did something that I almost never like to do, which is play a 9 a.m. game.
Yeah.
So we did that on Saturday with a fantastic GM. I think this is my highlight of the con.
Game-wise, I would say so, yeah.
Ken Eckhart did it, Lion Rampant Rules, cheese omelette.
Omelette du fromage.
But since I'm not French.
No, and you can never be French. Regardless of how bad you might want to be.
And it's funny because Alex, our buddy Alex, had been talking about Lion Rampant for ages, right?
He has, and I actually have the rules. I've read them a couple of times, and I was like, it sounds okay, but whatever.
You were a Debbie Downer about it.
Not really, but I wasn't in a huge hurry to paint stuff up and give it a try either.
Well, that too.
I don't have any medieval stuff. I was working on other stuff, and I was like, I'm not going to. Eventually, we'll give it a try, whatever.
Well, and I remember you saying, like, you looked at the rules, but you weren't that impressed with them. And I was like, well, if you're not impressed with them, then, like, I'm not going to be all, like, gung-ho about it.
Yeah.
But the game played fantastic. And I think part of it is Ken, right? Because Ken's an amazing GM.
Yeah, it's definitely partly Ken. But the game does play better than the rules read, so.
You had to have a sense of humor with this? Because you can really do it very straight-laced, right? It's just,
oh, yeah.
He has a medieval game.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of character to it, kind of references, which were kind of neat.
Yeah, it was actually a pretty hilarious game that he had set up.
There was a cheese size
side and a meat side.
Each player, right? You had a core character who was your general, who had this whole backstory.
Yeah,
you had an interesting backstory for your guy.
I did, Prince Sal Alami, but he was an adventurer gone on crusade. Well, there's actually more to it than that. If we're going to get into the whole thing, so my character supposedly had been wronged by one of the opposing side characters on the cheese side, Marshal Gruyere. And as a result of that, he was kind of banished, went on crusade, was captured while he was on the crusades, made a slave by the Muslims, won his freedom from the Muslims, came back to the homeland to right all the wrongs that were done to him. Come to find out over the course of the game that on the cheese side, you know, the enemy side, his actual former wife, girlfriend, whatever, was one of the generals on the other side, which he didn't know. And he actually had a son, which was locked away in
the tower.
In the tower. I can't remember the other character's name, but it was his son, which he didn't know he had a son, was locked away in the tower. So had we taken the tower, I assume that whole story would have devolved. Ah, it's your son.
Well, it's interesting because like these backstories were hidden. So
yeah, nobody knew what everybody else's backstory was. So
and it kind of played into each person had their own victory conditions that you tried to go. So it wasn't just like one side wins and another side loses.
Right.
So you kind of had that aspect going on. And then like my character, I was trying to like be divisive. And I was out for the king, so I had to like take the tower, which I didn't do, of course. But right, I played more aggressive than I normally play.
But it's more than you didn't just take the tower; you forgot you were supposed to take the
tower.
Well,
near the end, I was like, "Wait a sec! I've been stuck over here for four turns, and then next thing you know, let's go and but end a game."
Yeah, but no, it was a really fun story I had set up. So that was, yeah, I would say game wise, that was definitely the highlight.
Yeah, so that was fantastic. And actually, talk about games. We have a special guest here with us today, who talking about one of the games that he ran here at Huzzah. So if you just want to introduce yourself for all the listeners, speak nice and loud and clear to the mic.
Hi. Yep. I'm Chris Boynton. I'm a war gamer, and I've been doing this since TSR was famous for something other than D&D. I ran the feature game this year, which was the big battle, final push at Amiens, which was when the British made one of the first combined arms attacks in modern military history. So you had tanks, you had artillery, you had infantry, you had airplanes, all working in concert. We had a big table, 12 players.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And it was a collaborative effort. We had sponsors. We had people volunteering to paint figures. The rules I selected were the War Games, the Games Workshop historical set, the Great War. It's no longer published, but it's based on one of the earlier versions of Warhammer 40K. So it's a rule set that's pretty accessible. Yeah. At least half the players knew the basic mechanics of the game, so it made that pretty. But when you run a feature game like that, you're relying on a lot of other people to paint stuff, to construct terrain. It's not a one-man show. I've just dragooned my friend Tony Rieger, who's sitting to my immediate right and acting like he's not there. But yes, Tony Rieger, who's been in this almost as long as I have, he constructed a lot of the terrain. He also is a tremendous force in bolt action and World War II stuff in general, but
it's good to focus. I've got a lot of other interests, yeah,
but
it's good to
focus. But Tony did an enormous amount of work on the especially on the trench terrain,
that was gorgeous.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, in the trees,
and the
craters, I've got tons of barbed wire for you.
That's right. There's always more. It's the great thing about modern warfare. You always need a trench,
Never have enough.
And you never have enough.
True.
And so it was a great excuse to buy a crap load of trenches from you.
You're most welcome.
But Tony is just fantastic at all the model aspect of terrain. He just has a good eye for the little features, the things that really make a piece of terrain pop. To bring out that this is more than just a gaming piece. This is something
right.
that's been lovingly crafted by a man who might care too much about this.
Yeah, and you really can't overstate that. Looking at the bold action boards that were done for Stalingrad last year, which I have a ton of. That if we've put a bunch of pictures of them up, I think on the Facebook page. But if people haven't seen them, it's like you're playing a game on a museum quality diorama. It's amazing.
It's jaw-dropping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the trick is always, like, I was thinking about what Chris was just saying, but the trick is, like, I've got, like, some buddies who are, one in particular, who's a fine-scale modeler, and if there's anybody who's going to be able to go in and go, that's incorrect, that's too big, that's not dark enough, you didn't do the dirt right, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because that's a level of craft and attention to scale and the artistry of realism, and it also need not be durable. It needs to be under glass with a thing that says, don't touch the glass. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wargaming stuff has to be handled, not just transportation, but all of us playing on it. Yeah. Like, and some of us treat the miniatures and then the terrain carefully as they, you know, especially the better looking it gets, the more careful people are.
Yeah.
But other people, I feel like the more beautiful it is, the more ham-fisted they become.
Yeah, we were just having kind of like, yeah, I had a guy step on this many figures story just a few months ago.
Right, you did. One of my little, you know, lines I'm always saying, if you can't see your miniature dropped on the ground and being stepped, like in your imagination, you're in the wrong hobby.
Don't do it because it's going to happen.
And most people are really cool about it. But some people, you know, whether it's butterfingers or they just don't give a, you know, it's going to happen. And the other issue with wargaming terrain, I also find, is it has to function for the purposes of gaming first. That's like job one. It's like, can I put my miniature there?
Yeah.
You know, do the men fit in the trench, or are we just trying to, you know, it's like, but it's not the scale. It's like, it's a 40 millimeter base. It's got to fit something. Looks goofy, but it's got to fit. You know what I mean? Because it's a game piece first. And then, like Chris was like, and then if you can make it actually try to look as cool as you can, that's even better.
Yep.
You know, but once I find that usually once it starts to enter into that fine scale modeling, like it's starting to get real accurate and stuff, it tends to become precious and very easily broken. Yep. And as well as also the miniatures don't fit on it anymore.
That's,
you know,
true.
It's like the barbed wire is so authentically done, but now nothing can go on it, around it, or anything like that. So.
Yeah. The thing that amazed me was that you had all your Stalingrad tables up here again, basically for open play. I was like, there's no way I would let people on these tables.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, this is what's going to draw people. Most people, I mean, I remember like when Chris and I were first doing, you know, you build and get what you can, and, you know, it's good enough, and let's play, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
But then when these conventions and stuff, these big kind of events, it's like, you know, the money shot, you know what I mean? It's like people want to see the thing that's like, you know, that wowed them. They want to be able to, you know, have a spectacle and go home and go, you will not believe what I just saw. You
know they do. And particularly in a venue like this, it's not just the gamers that look at it, because there's just regular hotel guests that, the con, they don't care. They just let people wander through.
Right.
And they see all that stuff. And, what is this?
Right. People are playing on this.
It's more exciting than this last week's Scrabble tournament. You know?
Right.
Something
to look
at. Like, exactly.
I was saying to Adrian when we were looking at your tables that the thing that really stood out for me wasn't like the large buildings or any of the larger features, because I mean those are amazing, but it's all the small things, like the bricks, how the sand is laying, all the broken wheels and all that kind of stuff, because that really brings it more to life than just having, here's your gigantic building, here we go, and like it's a cool building, but like, okay.
Big draws the eye in, like either a lot of people around the table, and that everybody's like, you know, FOMO, they don't want, fear of missing out, they're like, well, what's going on over here, right? Is there an injured person, or, you know, did a fist fight break out? But then it's like the big stuff.
Bye, Kyle.
The big stuff draws people towards it. You know, like when I see the Civil War games that were up here, and some were huge, and it's just like, there's no way you can not go look at it.
Yeah, definitely.
You're like, you have to. You get drawn right to it because it's such a big physical spectacle.
Yep.
But like you were saying, it's really when you look at the small nitty gritty stuff that's where it becomes
absolutely
the most important. The Pavlov's house.
Yes.
Board, okay. Last year, people walk around, they're like, oh, I love this and I love that. I'm telling people, and I saw this table and everything. But the one thing that was sticking in my mind the whole convention, and they walk up and they point to the stove that's hanging out of the and they go, it's that little stove hanging out of there. The thing is that's actually in the photograph, though. When you go look at, there's like one photograph that's kind of like the only photograph that anybody sees when they go on the internet.
Yeah.
And you can see that the stove, the white stove, is hanging just by its stovepipe, as the whole rest of the floor has been blown out. So I was like,
a little 28 millimeter family lived there.
Exactly. It brings it alive.
Exactly. You know, so when I was modeling it, I was like, I can't not put the stove, because that's like one of the we can see.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what a huge impact that would make on the imaginations and memories of people. Because now they're like on Walter Harris's Monte Cassino table, like everybody's like, did you see the bathroom? Did you see the bathtub with the dirt in it and everything? And, you know, it's like, cause you see the whole board and then you see the buildings and then you look a little bit more, like you said, you're like, there's a tub. Look, he's got a photograph hanging in the wall. You know,
it's awesome.
Right? Yeah, it is.
It's really exciting stuff.
Yeah. It's just, it would take me, first of all, I couldn't do it, but if I were going to do it, it would take me, cause you put that stuff together for last year, like really quick,
I mean,
relatively speaking. Yeah, but I mean, for everything that's there, that's really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
So
and that was like version, like how many different versions of handmade stuff do you have?
Right.
All of his awesome stuff means that I get the previous generation.
I'm the
hand-me-down kid. You know, right. he gets all the awesome stuff and does it for his demo games. Like, oh wow, that was that's some 1995.
Right, 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 right.
This is already my best piece of terrain.
So. Right, right. This is the terrain that has the bell bottom. And it's now the 90s. I'm moving along, This one's wearing the 80s teal, neon. It was cool at one point, but no,
Yeah, but that's a great thing about this event. I'm on the cutting edge this year. Tony Rieger quality.
Right.
Do you guys have plans for next year yet?
Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, do I? I know that when.
Can you share?
It's going to be, Bolt Action has been moving really. Really well in our area, and I also know both in this North America and as well as Europe and stuff, Warlord's been doing really well. Mm-hmm. And I know that Gates of Antares, their science fiction game, and Bolt Action are get a lot of play, and a lot of people are into it. And part of what it is because these guys are the former Games Workshop, developers and stuff like that, and this is their company now. So there's a lot of stuff that's it's kind of basically that stuff again. You know what I mean? So for a lot of people, that's a touchstone. It means this is familiar. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want to do this. It's like having like your favorite film director or franchise. Let's say Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like whether the movie's good or not or anything like that, people are still going to go check it out because, it's Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I find that with this, it's kind of like that where people are like, well, it's the Games Workshop guys. So, how bad can it really be? And at least it'll be supported well. I can actually find the rule book on a shelf. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Chris and I have been playing like World War II rules for over 25 years now.
And of course, one day we'll find the perfect set.
It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
It's out there somewhere.
It's going to change on you and your mood and your time.
Right.
In some abstract
universe. And then Chris and I will be going, are we too old for gaming?
No.
Why don't we think this one's cool? And everyone's like, guys, this is the perfect one. This is the one you've always wanted. But we'll be too old to recognize it.
See, you said you needed this. It does all these.
Right. It's got the command and control. It's got the, right. Exactly.
More resource allocation. Right.
The weather is not realistic enough.
But for next year's project, we had talked about doing some kind of a winter theme.
Yes.
Thing, that's like the one big time terrain we have not.
Right.
You haven't really gone hard
on. There's been a lot of like winter figures coming out and in various lines, like Empress miniatures and stuff like that. A lot of people that are not just Warlord but other manufacturers are also doing great coats and winter gear.
The Kharkov set that Jorg had.
Right. Here 46.
Yeah, Here 46 did a set of winter Germans, like specifically for the Kharkov campaign because the winter gear is a little bit different. Russian love the winter. So all kinds of stuff for those too. So that would be I think that'd be neat.
I think that would be amazing.
Tony did a bunch of wood pieces for me, trees without leaves on them. So because it's a blasted forest from all the artillery shells. We're thinking, hey, if you take that as a base and then, winter it up.
Winterize it.
It would look
pretty
good. Yeah. So I'm thinking next year maybe we'll do some kind of a winter game.
Yeah.
Maybe Kharkov, maybe Bulge, maybe...
Maybe both.
Oh!
But something like that.
I think that'd be done. Once again, like that visual impact. It's like, doesn't have to be big building. One of the guys is like, cities. You're always doing cities. And I'm like, it's because all of us played on what I like to call affectionately the golf course.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a copse of trees, one house seemingly out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Hopefully not a Coke can and a sneaker as the objective, Yeah. But I'd played on those so much and then I'd go to, games and I'm like, darn it. It's here again. Right? Everybody brought their golf course green things.
The Street Fight is such a good tabletop scale because everything's so close together.
Right.
Yeah. You just got to have the terrain.
Right. Exactly. And it's also once again that spectacle factor because like you were saying, it's like if I could, would I have the time?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then of course the number one question is, where do you store it all?
True.
Right.
And the best part is I tell everybody, I'm like, Chris knows this. I live in an apartment. I don't even have property or a house or anything like that. So like I've got other, you know, other guys who've got like, I've been to their houses and they got beautiful big home, a huge yard, a garage, two snowmobiles.
You do have a wife with infinite patience, though.
That's right.
That helps.
Honestly, that's the most important part.
Right. Cause you know, because I'm like, please put it over here by the skidoo. And he's like, oh, well, you're and I'm like, dude, My terrain is down in a basement that my landlord allowed me to take a corner in it. And it's like, I can tell you, this basement is like out of the movie Seven.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. If you saw my, you know, like this beautiful terrain and you saw where it goes in between games, you'd be like, what are you? It has to be illegal. You can't do this.
It is a little creepier having all the air freshener in the ceiling. Yeah. But I'm sure it's a good reason for that.
Right. And the box, with one of the boxes has a head in it. All this beautiful terrain, and there is a victim down there.
No, I have all that crap in my attic. And why? I'm like, I don't live up there, so therefore I'm not a hoarder. So, I come down here and I live like a human being. I'm okay.
Right.
I don't stay up there.
Yeah, it's doing the big spectacle stuff that nobody else could do or would do. I'm really drawn to, because it's what it brings to everybody else and their gaming experience and what they get to talk about, what they get to play on too. I mean, cause like everybody goes, I see you make all this stuff and you come to the conventions and you never play. I was like, you know, it was Dave said, he's like, you're huzzah Santa. I put it all out and then I'm like, look, all the happy children. But it's true. I mean, they're like, what? I can walk up to this and play for open game. Yeah, I'm like, have at it, man. You know, play nicely. Try to don't trash it. You know.
Yeah.
But people, you know, they're like, this is better than anything I could play it at home. And I'm like, well, welcome to Zaw, you know.
Yeah.
See you next year. Yeah. And they're always asking what we're going to top next. And yeah, I'm going to move out of the city, I guess. Yeah, watch. I'll do Kharkov in the winter. Chris, like, you couldn't get away from the buildings. It's beautiful looking, but geez, man.
Downtown
Kharkov.
They fought there.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
That's funny.
It is. No, the stuff is awesome, and it is a good advertisement. I mean, let's face it.
Yeah.
It totally is. So.
Yeah, and that's awesome, because then everybody gets to see all the other stuff.
Exactly.
The more everybody draws in stuff, it's that much better for gaming in general, that much better for all the other people who put on all this hard work, that all the tables that they do and stuff. And also, you know, it's funny, some of the guys who've been doing this, you know, they step and they're like, ah, drat, now I got to redo my table because, you know, you're I want it to look real good now.
Yeah.
I mean? But that's inspiring. That's awesome, you know, because it just means that when everybody walks to all these other tables, it's like all of a sudden it's like, ah, did you see the table builded? It's like, oh, it's amazing now, you know. You know, it's a great game, but now it looks amazing, you know. That's really exciting.
Yeah. Now, do you have any Warlord has to be aware of what you're doing with it? So
yeah.
They've got to love it.
Right. And they're like, you're not even an employee.
have like a designation that's
right. Well, there were guys that were walking around the tables. I didn't hear it, but others came up to me and tell me, and they were like, ah, this is all put on war. The company had to have made all these and stuff, because there's no way any one person would ever do this for nothing.
Yeah, they'd have to be insane.
Crazy. Yeah.
Crazy.
Madman.
Right. Exactly. Right. What kind of insanity? Right. Yeah. But no, I don't build it for, you know, I'm not a part of the company or anything like that, but they've definitely noticed. And I'm talking with them, and I'm hoping that, you know, we'll be able to do more stuff, more encouragement, you know, to maybe someday they might come. Mm-hmm. Here,
yeah, that would be awesome.
Well,
that would
be great.
Yeah, they sang that last year, but you know, with that more kind of like our presence here,
exactly. Because they do, I haven't been to Historicon for years. The last time I went, they had a huge presence there. They had the Perry brothers there, they ran a huge Black Powder game. It was the first time I played, but if they could do some, they wouldn't do it on that scale here, probably it's not this big, but if they could do something like that, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
that would
be great. It would be, I mean, it would be really special. I mean, this year I found that there were people who had flown in from LA. People had driven 6 hours from New Brunswick and stuff just to come see this, just to play and stuff.
Yeah.
And the more that they're communicating with their friends, because obviously the technology we have, you know,
yeah,
they're snapping pictures and sending them immediately back home, and people are like, oh, well, if I'd known it was going to be that cool, I would have gone. I mean, that's, the, I think, really the inherent, you know, trepidation, if you will, that a lot of people have. It's like, you know, I'm going to get packed up in my car, and I'm going to drive all the way down. I'm going to spend money on tolls, and I got to get a room there and stuff.
Yeah.
What is going to be there? You know, is it just going to be something I can more or less see at my local game shop on any given Thursday night or what right. have you? Will there be anybody there? What's the mood or spirit of the place? You know, I don't know if I want to spend the money and the time just to kind of have like an okay time and look at some stuff. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff that they could see anywhere else, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
But when they feel that, like, for example, like, when there's celebrities like at a Historicon, when the, you know, game world celebrities like the Perry brothers, everybody knows, you know, and yep. people are like, oh, well, it'd be kind of cool to go meet the Perry brothers. You yeah. know what I mean?
You yeah, know, I might send you like one of my stanza figures and have them sign the base.
Right, you know? Right, right. It's getting to that point, Tony. Right. You know?
But, you steal like a.
Right, yeah, exactly.
No, I didn't ask that.
No, right. 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 Although they're nice
guys. Creepy stars here.
Who knows?
Right.
Perry, so you just want to send me a piece
right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's a lock of their hair. No, no, too far. Right now. But yeah, and that's, and I think that, you know, all of us. Enjoying and putting forth our best efforts and stuff like that to put on these really kind of really cool looking fun. I this whole, like, for me, this whole convention, one of the things that a lot of people say, but you know, I do too, is it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Did everybody, it's like, I feel like I used to have to go to camp all summer in the summers and stuff. You know, my folks would send me away kind of yeah. thing. And after a while it stopped feeling like a punishment and it started to feel more like, wait a minute, I'm going to meet my friends from New Jersey and all that that get sent to this camp here in the northern woods of Maine and stuff like that. And then it became like, this is the only time I'll see them. And sometimes the connections are the best connections. And I'm like, I only see them once a year, but they're my best friends.
Yeah.
Because there's something about that camaraderie that happens, this special magic where it's, I don't know, it just feels like home. It feels like camp. And that's what I feel like here is when I come here, I'm like, I haven't seen most of these guys since the last Azam.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
everybody's like, oh my God, dude, I want to talk to you. Hey man, how's it going? You're putting on a really good, yeah, I loved your table last year.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, know, even though we see each other more often than that, our get-togethers for the last 3 months have been Hazaa-centered.
Right. Right, 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 right.
It gives us a reason to get together and actually
it
do
really
something.
It really does. Yeah. And that's a really good point, Chris. You're totally right. It's like it gives us like a purpose and a reason to like really, you know, put the hustle on, you know,
right,
rather
right.
than like, eventually I'll get my Romans painted. When are we going to play? I don't know. I don't, you know. Yeah. But with Hazaa, there's a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
There's right. an expectation. You know, that people are like, you know, we don't want to disappoint people. We don't want to say that we're going to put on this big Roman fight and all of a sudden we show up and everybody's like, this is your big Roman fight? You know, it's like half of them are not painted and it's only about maybe 100 figures.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, please.
Cool. All right. Anything else you guys want to share?
No, thanks.
Well and great. Another thing.
Now that we've changed subjects, let's get comfortable. Right? Yeah,
exactly. I wasn't sure if you're going to pull a Henry Hyde and be like, well, now that I'm here, right, yeah. I'll keep you for the next.
Right, right, exactly. Right. Yeah, you gotta go see.
Yep, there. Absolutely. Yeah. As well as like,
you've obviously never done this before. So I'm curious to see if you're gonna win.
I feel like a B-52 flying over Berlin. You know what I mean? I'd rather B-17 flying over Berlin kind of thing because it's like I'm like trying to get here to get to the podcast right. and the flack of people.
I know.
Like
Tony.
Right, stay on course, stay on mission. You're almost the Jonathan site. You can almost make it.
Right on. Thanks for having right. me.
Thank you both for coming
thanks
on.
Thanks a lot, guys. Really appreciate
it. Was fantastic.
Great.
Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
You
Take
too.
Care.
Exciting conversation about what goes on behind the scenes.
So that, much better than just talking to you for an hour.
Wait, isn't it? I mean, because we do this all the time. That's one of the great things about when you do a live show or whatever. You get other people who can come in, so you kind of broaden your horizons.
The actual stuff. Interesting people instead of us. Yes,
yeah. Well,
it's much better.
I am definitely not interesting. And I often will say, you know, like one of the things I really like about having either a co-host or like a guest come on is like listeners can hear me all the time, right?
Yeah.
Or even really now they can hear you more or less almost all the time.
Pretty frequently anyway.
So it's nice to hear other people besides us and kind of put the spotlight on them.
Yeah, it definitely is. And no joke about Tony, his stuff is.
Oh, he's fantastic.
Simply mind-blowing. I mean, there's no other way to describe it.
And for people who don't understand, like, you might think, oh, like a year, that's a really long time. No, it is not a really long time to get that kind of stuff.
Not at all. And honestly, the pictures that we have up of it, the pictures can't really do it. You've got to see it in person.
Oh, you have to.
You've got to see it in person.
And he has, I think he's brought portions of it to Havoc, right?
I believe so. We didn't get to Havoc this year, but I think he did, yeah.
Just it's something else. So since we went forward in time from medieval ages to World War II, why don't we go back in time with a little time traveling like the Doctor to American Civil War?
Oh, right. Yeah, I'd actually forgotten about that one.
Fire and Fury Brigade second edition rules?
Yes.
What'd you play?
We played the Battle of Cedar Creek.
You played?
I played Battle of Cedar Creek.
Some of us couldn't get into the game.
No, it was. I knew it was going to be popular, which is why I wanted to sign up for it. I've played Fire and Fury Regimental a couple of times. I haven't played Brigade for I don't know, a long time. Brigade came out in 1990, I think.
I think you might be right.
But anyway, I haven't played the Brigade level rules in a long time. They're very similar the way the mechanics and everything work, but still, I saw it pop up and I wanted to give it a try. So yeah, he ran it, and I keep saying he, and that's because I'm a horrible person. I can't.
Peter Dalton.
That's
who also ran Rapid Fire game that we weren't able
that
to get
we weren't
into.
Able to get into. Yeah.
Not his fault that
Not
we weren't able to get into it
at all.
Nope.
So yeah, what was I talking about? Cedar Creek, Battle of Cedar Creek.
Yes, sir.
So I ran that, which is a American Civil War battle in 1864. It's an interesting scenario because the Union Army is encamped in entrenchments behind, you know, Cedar Creek, the head of the Shenandoah Valley, and the Confederate forces attack them. But when they attack, they catch the Union completely off guard. Most of them are still in bed. The only people who are out and about are the pickets. So for the first two, three turns of the game, which actually occur at night, so visibility is limited, the Confederates just basically run roughshod over the Union forces. So we played through, I think, five turns, maybe six turns, mm-hmm. And didn't actually have time to finish the game. Unfortunately, there were some setup issues. Pete didn't have as much time to set up as he thought he was going to.
Well, partly because you guys played on the same table that we played Lion Rampant, and yeah, we ran out of time for that too.
Yeah,
like we were able to come to a conclusion with it, but really we could have used another turn or two, I think, for Lion Rampant at
least.
Yeah,
we probably could have. Yeah, that was probably part of it. But in any case, yeah, we played through five turns, and I mean, the Union reinforcements hadn't even come on the table yet. They had a cavalry corps that hadn't got on the table. All the Confederate troops were on the table by that time. But it ended up being a marginal Confederate victory. But it's a good set of rules. I enjoy the Fire and Fury rule sets.
What side were you on? Were you?
I was Confederate.
Oh, so you were on the right side.
Yeah, I was Kershaw's brigade.
Okay, there you go.
So
as I get very controversial there in this day and age.
Not with me. Yeah, who cares?
People might be...
History is history, like it or not.
True. But people might be surprised that while you were gaming and we're at a gaming convention, I, as the old man I am, took a nap.
Yep.
Went up to the room, and I was like, I'm going to do all these things, and I was going to go get equipment.
It's tough hanging out with Jonathan. It's like, it's either you're with a 90-year-old man, he's like, oh, God, I'm worn out, I need a nap. Or he's like a 12-year-old girl taking pictures of everything he puts in his mouth so he can put it on Facebook.
Instagram. Food goes on Instagram, not Facebook.
Food goes in your mouth.
I thought you'd understand this. We had to use the hashtag HuzzaCon 2018.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I hashtagged the bleep out of that stuff. But I was like, I'm going to go up and I'm going to use, because we got this cool, it's a smartphone gimbal you can get. Put your smartphone in and like you can walk around so it has a handle and it keeps it great. It makes it look almost as good as like indie filmmaking. And actually, a lot of indie filmmakers are transitioning to this kind of stuff, whether for their smartphones or for other things. So I was like, I'm going to get it and go and do stuff. And then was going to work on some other stuff for the previous podcast episode. Yep. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to sit. And then I talked home and got to talk with my daughter and my wife. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to rest and work on it while I'm sitting in bed. Don't even remember falling asleep. Bam. I'll like light and I wake up and I'm like, whoa, what time is it? And I thought your game was over. And you're like, oh no, I got another hour. It's like, oh really? Well, and then I like banged out the stuff and got things going. But that nap was delightful until last night when it's after midnight. I'm like,
Yeah, wide awake now.
Yeah, that was a problem. But speaking of last night, but not last night for listeners, depending on that listening to it, but the Saturday night of the convention, we played another game, which was, well, I think I had a lot of fun, but I don't know how much fun you had. Test of Honor.
Oh, I had fun with it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Test of Honor just fine. We played.
You must have just been sleepy.
I was sleepy.
So Test of Honor, this was interesting, right? Because it was a unique group of people. There were a lot of people who never played Test of Honor.
Yep.
Some people have never played a war game, I think. And we also, like you and I, we played Test of Honor once before.
One time.
At Huzzah. But it was so long ago. I mean, it was a year. Yeah. But like, since we don't play it ever really, I couldn't remember really how to do anything. And
I couldn't remember any of the mechanics until, I mean, Patrick went over everything real quick, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. It is a very simple game to pick up. So
it was neat though, because like you said, Patrick Tuttle and Chris Rett, they were the co-GMs, and so they ran like a demo game basically for us.
Basically, yeah.
For people who like didn't know what to do. Or like us, with very, very little experience, just kind of get the mechanics. And that, for us anyway, it went on and on and on because we're like trying to kill these guys and we can't.
Yeah, it took forever. Partly, I think, probably because there were so many people. But
well, I get the feeling that's also kind of a core mechanic with the game, that if you're just looking for something where you're going to go and like beat up the other side, you're probably not going to get it. It's more dynamic when you're doing the special missions where you're doing like an escort mission or you're trying to like find something or like the extra kind of stuff like that.
Yeah.
As opposed to just like, I'm lining up my forces. I'm going to march towards you. You're going to line up your forces and march towards me. And we're going to see who kills more of the other guy. And so like, it's not so great for that, but it's fantastic. Just so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. Like I say, it's a really easy system to pick up and it plays fast. So
I think I have to label Chris as a superstar GM for me too.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, definitely. He runs a good game.
Amazing. And he's actually only the second person I think I've labeled that.
Was I the first one?
Of course you were.
Okay.
it's funny because the first one we were playing on his table, we were playing on the Hing Hai table.
Yeah.
So it's nice to do that. And I think next year they're going to actually go full hog, right, and just actually have it set in Hing Hai instead of actually just being on the table.
Yeah, that was the impression I got. Yeah, after we finished up the demo game, they split everybody off to do, because Test of Honor is basically a one-on-one game. That's how it's designed.
Yeah, tourney kind of.
Yeah, so they split out everybody into other tables and one-on-one games. I did play on Mike's Hang High table. But yeah, the way they were talking after the games had finished up last night, I think they want to do something large scale and actually set it, you know, in Hang High. So that'll be fun if they get to do that.
Yeah, I think that'll be a really good time. And I mean, we had I was playing with a good group. So I was playing, I don't remember everyone's name, but I was playing with Jorg Bender and his wife Petra and Mike Payne and myself and Bill. I didn't catch Bill's last name, but I was playing with Bill and Chris Rett was GMing. But you only played one game, right?
Yeah.
We played the demo, we played two or three missions, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
So we got through quite a bit, and I mean, just a great group of people. A lot of fun, neat set of rules, and it's a time period and a place and a setting that I really enjoy. But for me, the problem with it, when you go into something like feudal Japan around here, I think most people tend to play European stuff or American stuff. So you're talking about a whole other set of terrain and all that kind of stuff, and some stuff carries over. But like, I think you have to do more of an investment and really like dedicate yourself to doing some more of this kind of stuff.
You would, because yeah, you're right. I mean, like for the most part, trees are trees and stuff like that. But yeah, you would have to make a whole new invest. But the thing is, you wouldn't have to invest in a lot. I mean, you could get away with what, two, three buildings. You wouldn't need a lot of terrain to do it. For me, I mean, as we know, I have a hard time with assembly and painting anyway.
True.
Being dedicated to it, and although I really enjoy the game, the period, the history isn't something that I'm super interested in. So I'll probably never pick up Test of Honor, but I'll play it every chance I get. It's really fun.
One thing I really liked about it, if you're someone who's like, oh, I'm going to think about getting this, and I'm not so sure, the way Chris was talking is that you buy the core set, and he said there's enough figures and things in there for like 4 to 5 players.
Yeah.
So like you could get it, and you're not going to have a ton of stuff. It's going to be pretty basic, I think. You can have some samurai, you can have some commoners, but that's really how your force is set up. You can have a combination of the two. So it's not like you're the lone samurai going off or whatever.
Right.
But you're going to get that nice mix. It has some terrain in there. And if you like that HGF, MDF kind of terrain, it comes with foreground stuff, but foreground and Sarissa make a terrain for it.
Yeah.
And the pieces look really nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I do think you can have a difficult time finding appropriate terrain for this.
Yeah.
Unless you're willing to do a lot of repurposing.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, like, if you go on Warlord's website, they have a lot of support for it. I don't think terrain would be your biggest issue.
No, because like I see a lot of stuff online. People are trying to find appropriate trees, or like Chris has this beautiful koi pond that he got, and then he added like water effects too. Yeah. Like he had to search really hard for that, and I know he said I don't remember the name of it, but the traditional ceremonial Japanese drum, you know, the big drum like they carry for the religious ceremonies and stuff. Yeah. Like he had a hard time finding those too. Just to kind of add some flavor. Like, so some of those smaller pieces, I think you can get like buildings, and I don't think that's an issue, but if you want
to
get,
I see what you're saying.
Like scatter terrain.
Yeah, flavor pieces and stuff. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that possibly being a problem, but the more popular it gets, the less problem it'll be probably, maybe, I don't know.
Well, and while I was playing, I could kind of see York's wheels in his head going a little bit. So maybe, I don't know, maybe things from the basement might be having some stuff coming soon. And I'm not quite sure about that.
Yeah,
but that'd be kind of neat. Actually, speaking of things from the basement, why don't we talk about the vendors a little bit?
Okay, go ahead.
So you got some purchases that you made, right, this year?
I did a few.
Not as many as usual, though.
No. I restrained myself pretty well. I only bought, what did I buy? 5 things, I think.
Yeah. So you got some stuff, what, right from the Hobby Bunker? Perennial favorite?
I did. I always throw money at the Hobby Bunker when I'm up here. The only thing I got this year, though, was... the set of rules. I actually bought the Fire and Fury Brigade level second edition rules because the book I have is first edition, and there are some differences between the two. So I wouldn't have gone looking for it, but he had it there, so I figured, pick it up.
I'm curious, after you read the second edition more fully, what kind of differences there are and how significant they end up being to the gameplay.
Yeah, mostly I think what they did with the second edition was roll some of the mechanics from Fire and Fury Regimental into the Brigade version.
Good or bad?
It's good. They're still very different games, which they should be because of the scale.
Well, yeah.
But, they're closer together mechanics-wise now, I think, than they were before.
Cool.
I think those are some of the bigger changes.
You got some nice purchases from Wee Wolf Miniatures.
I did. I bought, and this one we're kind of excited about. We've been talking about it since release, but...
I'm really excited about this
bought, one. Bought Gangs of Rome, one of the kind of starter sets, Blood on the Aventine. Wee Wolf had it there. So, and it was fairly inexpensive, so I was like, if I buy this, are we really going to play it? Are we really going to play it? And I was like, we probably will. There's only, I think the kit comes with 7 figures, which they say is enough for a game, which seems odd to me, but we'll see.
So one of the great things about Gangs of Rome, for anyone who's a member of the Facebook group will understand the reference, is that you really don't need many figures to play. It's randomized on what your characters are. So it has a points element to it, but a lot of it is flavor based on what the skills are that your character gets and that kind of thing. So you can add a lot of flavor and customization to your mobs and to your gangs. Yeah. And then there's actual mobs in there too. And I think in the core set, they're represented by tokens, but you can actually get figures and you can get bases, so you can put them, so you can have like a nice 3D representation of this mob that goes on as well. But you can get all sorts of really nice customization and flavor. You can buy extra stuff, of course, from their website. Mm-hmm. And it was partially put out by the people from Footsort Miniatures, Indie Hobby, who helped design it. But it's completely under this new company, War Banner, which is really sweet. So you get some great people there working on it. Ceres is making all the terrain. The terrain piece you get in the core set is really nice.
Yeah.
It only costs you, what, like $50?
$50.
Yeah. It's actually not that bad. And I know I already told you, but I was like, you know, we can put like a shoebox on the table for terrain or whatever. Like, as long as the models are put together.
How can you say that after sitting here and talking to Tony Rick?
Because he's not sitting here. Well, I'm saying it. If Tony and Chris are here, I'd be like, well, we need the very nicely detailed.
they do. The kit does come with a really nice looking.
Gorgeous.
Temple model.
It's either MDF or HGF again.
The problem is you got to put it together.
And do you know... they do have tutorials. I think they did like a 10-part how to play tutorial series, and they've also released other YouTube tutorials on assembling the terrain for Gangs of Rome and all that, and also on painting it, because I know painting MDF, HDF, people kind of have a problem with it, because I've heard things like you actually have to do like PVA glue and do like a base of that, or you have to use like a sealant first, because otherwise it's going to soak it up.
Yeah, I've heard enough about it to make me never ever want an MDF terrain piece, but unfortunately that's what the terrain for Gangs of Rome is, so gonna have to deal with it.
Well, what I was really surprised by, they have someone who painted their stuff, and he only used spray paint.
No.
He used, I think, three different colors of spray paint, and, you know, like, he did, like, a base coat, and, like, that kind of, like, sealed it in, I guess, whatever. And then he just kind of tackled it in three colors, and he got it looking just like a Roman building. And I'm sure far more skilled than I would be, or even you.
I'm sure, too.
But, like, just being able to get that in, sure. And just with the spray paint, it makes you wonder. And actually, York has some great instructions on things in the basement for assembling and suggestions for painting his stuff. And worth a discussion with him to see what he thinks. Because there's actually a lot of debate in the community about whether it is or is not a problem.
Yeah, it's I've noticed that, too. I mean, it's kind of a love-hate thing with the MDF, because on the one hand, assembling it can be a pain.
Depends on the
piece. I mean, a normal person could build a house in the time it takes me to glue together, like, a foreground building.
Well, it's because, like you need rubber bands or whatever. But one thing, so there's a guy on YouTube, the Terrain Tutor, and one thing he recommends is just getting some, like, cheap rare earth magnets.
Yeah.
And just, like, using that instead of doing, like, the whole rubber band thing around the stuff or whatever. Or, like, gluing together Lego pieces for, like, corners and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I watch his video series all the time. And then I'll go and try to do the stuff he does because it looks so easy. And I'm sitting like, this guy, this is terrible. But, anyway, that's just me. But yeah, the good thing about MDF, of course, is I think it's relatively easy for him to design the stuff, and it's generally cheaper than laser, like, a resin or whatever. So huge advantages there, of course. I'm sure this guy will get his car alarm worked out any minute now.
there you go. Joshua, I'm sure, loves editing that. No, you're right. And actually, because it's laser cut, like, one thing I think everyone recommends is you got to take, like, a damp paper towel and just kind of rub over it so you get the excess off.
Get all the dust and everything.
Like, I love the smell. Like, you get a nice woodsy smell and you got it in. It's pretty sturdy, so it's nice to
put on. Yeah. No, like I said, it's a love-hate relationship. They're awesome.
Yeah.
But I tend to go the pre-assembled route. Crescent route or whatever.
I like pre-assembled. Although even them, they're going now towards MDF. I don't know if you're aware. They started doing hybrid, but I think they're going to transition more towards.
I knew that.
So that's interesting. And you got a board game you've been looking for from Clash of Arms.
I actually hadn't been looking for it, but I saw it there, and I was like, yeah, I got to buy that. La Bataille de Orthez, which people are familiar with the old Marshall Enterprises games, or the Clash of Arms games from Ed Wimble. But this is another one in the Napoleonic La Bataille series, which is a grand tactical battalion regimental level treatment of whatever the topic of the day is. In this case, it's the Battle of Orthez, which took place in 1814 after the British had invested Bayonne. Yeah, a vendor had it here, and it was incredibly inexpensive for what I'm used to paying for the La Bataille games. It's brand new, unpunched, and it was very cheap. So I was like,
"That's amazing."
Yeah, please take my money.
So, you know, that actually raises a really good point. I think people often think, oh, you know, like, I can just buy stuff on Amazon or like an online vendor and you can get it cheap. And usually you can get it cheaper than a brick and mortar. But a nice thing about not all conventions, but at least Huzzah anyway, you can actually find some reasonable deals. So, like, you can shop. You don't have to actually play, be it someone who pays, I believe, in order to shop at the vendors. You can come look around and shop.
Yeah.
So you can actually get some business. But, like, if you're going to do that, like, it helps out the vendors, and that, of course, helps out the con. But, like, sign up for a badge anyway, because you might see a game you want to play, too.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of chance to drop in. But then, like, you get all these really neat finds, like you were saying.
Yeah, and he also had a punched a copy of, actually, no, it was unpunched, I think.
I think you said unpunched.
Of Avalon Hill, the old Avalon Hill game, Wooden Ships and Iron Men, which is a great Age of Sail war game from Avalon Hill, which I had instructed Jonathan to buy, but he fiddled around, and didn't go over and put his money down, so someone else got it.
You mean I was paying attention to the game we were playing?
It would have taken you 5 minutes.
It didn't get up during the game to go and get it. And do you know what? I don't begrudge the person who picked it up, because I know who picked it up. And he knows, too, because we're talking about it. but I'm happy for him that he got it. And but I got actually some great games, too. And I've been trying to transition to more of the GMT kind of stuff to try to try that out. And so I picked up a couple games that I was not expecting to find at all at this convention. But I got them from Dean Emerson's Brigadier's Bookshelf. So I picked up Maneuver, which was recommended by MHWA Vice President Joshua. And I also picked up a copy of A Distant Plane from the Coin series. That's one that's been written up like all over the place. Board Game Geek, New York Times, Boston Globe. Everyone's been talking about like the coin setup and how it's really trying to represent postmodern warfare now. Yeah. And that is supposed to do a great job. The great solo games, which is something that I like. And I'm really excited about it. So like we already mentioned, we did the unboxing of Maneuver, spelled the French way. And for those who try to look it up online, we'll have links to as many of these as we can for our Amazon affiliate program, which you can find by going to the show notes, actually, because we didn't mention the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR209. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR209. Bring you to the show notes for this episode, and you'll have links to all the things that we talked about and that Tony and Chris has talked about. Do you want to talk about any things that have gone awry, any problems that we may have had this year? Things that people might encounter?
I don't think we've had any particular problems this year. I don't think so, really, aside from the one that was our fault, my fault.
We got that on record.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like minor things, really. Like the elevators, every con has problems with the elevators. You can't do that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with cons and elevators, but they had one car out of service.
They fixed it. They're just slow or whatever. Like we had an issue with the room, which wouldn't matter to anyone else, but because of all the electrical, the one outlet I was trying to plug all my stuff into, it's not the console, it doesn't have anything to do.
Yeah, see, the outlet on my side worked, so I didn't even consider that a problem.
So like, things are good, and you want to talk about any of the people that we encountered? We did encounter lots of people. I don't know about you, but everywhere I went, there's person after person saying hi or whatever. You didn't get that?
No, see, nobody says hi to me. I'm not sure why that is.
They don't like you.
Yeah, Dean did.
Oh, really? Dean's polite. He fakes it. I think, just like Tony and Chris were talking about, one of the nice things about Huzzah is if you come more than once, if you come with any sort of regularity, and even if you only come infrequently, but you're active online, you get to know the people to some degree. And so you see a lot of familiar faces, and you can put the names of the faces. So like coming here, it's just like a big friendly gathering. So you're able to just kind of dive right back in. You pick up where you left off. So like when we came on Friday, we were walking around, and just it was like one person after another. We're going, and someone saying hi, and this person saying hi, and chatting, and oh, how's this going? We saw that, or whatever. And it's funny that, like this year, there was at least two, maybe three people who commented about the April Fool's joke that I had done. Yeah. And some people fell for it, and some people did not. We'll link to the Facebook post for that. But it was just nice to see a lot of people. So I don't know about you, but I have some shout outs I want to. Did you, anyone you want to shout out to?
No.
I just want to give some shout outs to Dan, Mike Payne, Patreon backer Kyle, our Wargaming Recon fan club members, Robert, Sal, and Johnny, and everyone at the MHWA, including Joshua, Julie, Dean, Billy, and Mike, the Vanguard Hobby Club, but especially Ken at the Hobbies, Gordon, and Denise. I know there's other people whose names I'm leaving out, but not on purpose. It's just a lot of names, a lot of people to try to write down and get in and everything, but just it's nice seeing everyone. It's a good group of people, and really, like, I think gamers get a bad rap that you're gonna go and there's gonna be like issues. There's like a personal hygiene issue people often bring up, or like table flip kind of problems, like Francis, for those of you familiar with YouTube. But by and large, you don't get much of that.
No, that stuff doesn't really happen.
It's great. It's family friendly, but it's also adult friendly, because like the contents will be sponsored by Shipyard. Yep. So you can get adult beverages pretty easily, carry them on the floor. That's good. But like, so teachers responsible drinking with children, not that they should be, but like that they should be aware. So you kind of get that nice melding. They have a great cadet program going on. More and more kids are coming. We had tons of kids playing, and especially not even just in kid-only games, which was wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was great.
They did really good. Lion Rampant, there was a younger gentleman who was playing, and he was amazing. I think he was playing with his dad, which was really nice.
He killed me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually playing Marshal Gruyere, who is Prince Salani's mortal enemy, and one of my goals was to challenge him to Mortal Kombat, which I did, and he ended me.
So. Kid killed you. That's great. Well, anything else you want to mention about the convention while we're chatting?
No, I don't think so. Other than just say that I'm sorry it's over, and now I can't wait for next year.
Well, so I've learned my lesson. Usually when I go to these things, I take off like the travel day. So like the Friday or whatever. Yeah. And then it's the weekend and then I'm back at work on Monday. And I learned that this time I wasn't going to do it. I was going to give myself a day to recover. So I my mini vacation is not quite over.
No, that's good. Yeah, I should have done that.
Which is quite nice. But... And actually, I should front load like an extra like half a day just so I'm not packing that Friday morning and getting the stuff done.
Yeah.
One of these days I'll do that. But I want to thank everyone at Huzzah. It's amazing. Yep. And the people who put it on, MHWA, the Maine Historical War Games Association, a great group of people that work really hard. Not only do they do Huzzah, but they do several game days throughout the year. They actually get involved with helping with kids throughout the area. So although it's a Maine group, they actually are very heavily involved throughout Eastern New England.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably more, I mean, they're obviously in Maine, but it's more of a New England group, really.
Yeah. Like southeastern New Hampshire, northern or eastern Mass, like just kind of spreads throughout that whole thing, somewhat into Vermont as well. They do an amazing job. They really work their butts off, and they're all volunteers. And I believe, like I said, that I believe they are a nonprofit group. So lend a hand where you can. And we are grateful, not just because they're sponsors, but I mean, we were liking them before they were sponsors. So.
Yeah, of course.
It's a good thing. And by the time everyone's listening to this episode, just want to go through some announcements. This was recorded live at Huzzah 2018, which ran May 18th through the 20th. And we did this on a Sunday morning, which was kind of cool. We got to play with some great people at a variety of games. And I think you and I both are probably in agreement. In as much fun as we had playing a lot of games, next time probably won't play as many, right?
That's what I say. That's probably not what will happen. I'll probably fill my schedule up again.
See, and I think I'm definitely going to reduce the number of games I play. Not because I don't like to play them, but because, like, if I'm doing it for the show, I need a nap all the time. No, it's like I actually got to – like, you were going to take a lot more pictures, right? You're going to go around. We talked about interviewing people and all that kind of stuff.
And
like,
there's literally – because you've got an hour between games. There's no time to do any of that stuff.
You're lucky to eat anywhere. So just trying to be able to do a little bit more of all that. I want to thank our War Gaming Recon Army members and remind everyone about our Patreon campaign. For as little as $1 a month, you can support the show at wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. Get all the show notes over at wargamingrecon.com/WR209. Cover all the things that we talked about in this episode, links to stuff and all that sort of things. Next episode, 210, comes out on July 18, 2018. Can't believe that'll be our 210th episode, can you?
No.
And we actually have a little bit of news about that. So if you look at our episode guide, link in the show notes, we kind of reveal who guests are going to be and all that kind of stuff. And I've been talking for a while that episode 210 is planned to be our Dwarven Forge Kickstarter episode. And it's not. So last night...
Surprise!
well, last night I was talking with the agent, and I was going to be like, hey, so are you available to come on the episode for it? Because I think you'd really like it. And I realized that although I had communicated with the folks at Dwarven Forge, they actually hadn't signed themselves up. They hadn't booked themselves into a recording session with us. And so I communicated with them. And then the first thing this morning, when I woke up, I saw that there was a message from them. And their Kickstarter has been pushed back a little bit into July. And I don't remember the exact date. And even if I did, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it just yet. So they wanted to push back the recording a little bit. So that means episode 210 will not be them, but in their two teens. We'll be having an episode with Stefan Picorni and Nate Taylor from Dwarven Forge. So that will be happening. We're just getting moved around to meet everyone's schedules a little bit better. So I don't know what we'll discuss in episode 210, but we'll talk about something fun, I'm sure.
We will. Maybe we could actually try to play one of the games that we bought and do something on that.
Well, do you know what I think would be delightful?
What?
If we reviewed Perry Brothers Travel Battle.
Yeah, God, how long have we had that? We definitely need to do that. Okay.
So I think that would be fantastic for us to actually do and dig into. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon, and I hope you enjoyed your time with us here. Adrian, thank you for being co-host of this episode.
You're more than welcome.
Thank you. I am more than appreciated about that. I want to thank our guests who we have sent on our merry way, Chris Borton and Tony Rieger, for taking the time to come on the show. And again, everyone at MHWA, a huge, huge thanks to Joshua for all that he's done. He's been fantastic and greatly appreciate all of that. So you guys, you know the drill. No matter how busy you are, you're going to make me laugh. You're doing it.
Go ahead, Thomas.
You need a moment?
No, I'm all set. Go ahead.
I mean, this is outtake stuff, but Joshua, keep it in. Are you good? Because I won Straight Lace once and you complained. Do you remember that? And
I do remember that.
You were like, it's too cheesy. Just tone it down. And so I did. And then I asked you about it and you said, no, that's wrong. Get to go back.
Yeah.
It's you. It's not me. I tried. I mix it up. I do other things.
All right. I'm all set. Go
full ahead energy.
Go ahead and cheese it up.
Okay. I mean, it's a full hog, right?
Yeah.
Okay. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, you know that you have to make some time to come to Huzzah because you're going to miss it if you don't. Trust me, because we're going to bombard social media with all sorts of stuff about it. That's right. You got to. You need to. You have to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.